Every newsletter, every tweet is essentially a lottery ticket. It's something that you throw out into the world that might be picked up by someone who reads it and says, okay, this person gets it. I want to work with them.
Hey, friend, it's David Dubinsky here in Brooklyn. Here at Portfolio Career Podcast, we help you take ownership of your portfolio career and design the life that you want to live. Today's conversation is with Dror Polig. Dror is the author of Rethinking Real Estate, a recent course creator and teacher of a brand new cohort-based course called Hype Free Crypto. You can learn more at hypefreecrypto.com, and it's also available on maven.com. As I mentioned, the name of the course is called Hype Free Crypto. We talk about really trying to break down what is going on in the world of cryptocurrencies and Web3 technologies, how that may apply to knowledge workers, creators like yourselves, and some different ways to think about business models and value exchange is a more. We also talk about how the internet is enabling people to connect, just like Dror and I did for this conversation. So a lot of great ideas and practical tips to how to get involved, to learn more in this emerging technology space. As always, this episode with timestamp notes is available on my website at portfoliocareerpodcast.com. There you can subscribe to my newsletter called One Email Away, which has the best insights from the podcast and friend-sourced job opportunities. So excited for you to build and grow your portfolio career. Here we go with Dror. Dror, welcome to the show.
Hi, David. Great to be here.
So before we get kind of too started, we'll talk about the t-shirts later, but I was curious about kind of starting parties and promoting parties when you were 14 or 15 or so. I think it's that was an interesting little thing that I learned about you. Maybe you talk to us a little bit about those kind of early party promoting days and maybe, yeah, just kind of how you got into that so early.
So I grew up in Israel, which is a very kind of safe place for children and also has very nice weather. And people tend to be quite entrepreneurial. And at least in my family, you know, I was taught that, you know, when you have free time, you have to go and work, whether it is in the summer or even during the school year from a relatively young age. Thank God, you know, I had everything I needed at home, but it was just more of like a, you know, a values thing that my parents always wanted me to know that, you know, you have to work for stuff. And those jobs included the going and painting kindergartens or helping the neighbor fix stuff or, you know, rebuild their attic. But then I found out that there's a cooler way to make money, which is to team up with a DJ friend of mine who was my older brother's age. And just to convince a few other kids my age to come to a party and to pay whatever it is that they're paying and to get a percentage of the of the door fee. So I started doing that with a few friends. We started really, really young, even before 14 or 15. I think maybe 11 or 12 possibly was the first time. So, you know, the DJ was like 14 or 15 and we were like, okay, we're just going to bring everyone after school to this place on a Friday and everyone will pay like more or less a dollar in today's terms. And, you know, there'll be some soft drinks and, you know, we'll take a cut. And then I started doing more and more of it. And actually that's what brought me to the internet because I started designing flyers and then emailing people and participating in all sorts of messaging boards about music and parties. And yeah, and became a little more boring since then, but still trying to be cool.
and you mentioned it brought you to the internet and you know, to kind of give little people, bring up to speed, it seems like emerging technologies and kind of tinkering with ideas and products and services has been a, you know, kind of a focus for you for a handful of years and kind of been early exposed to kind of cryptocurrencies and stuff because you were kind of based in China for a little while. Talk to us a little bit about how you started getting interested in kind of cryptocurrencies and yeah, maybe that'd be a good place to kind of bring us up to speed a little bit.
So my interest in crypto comes from a few different directions. One, by training, I'm an economic historian, so I have a master's in that from the London School of Economics. So I've always been very interested in, you know, the history of money and the history of different business models and how things change and evolve over time. So a lot of the stuff that a lot of crypto people are obsessed with at the moment and a lot of the books that they start discovering or thinkers that they kind of like to quote are the kind of things that I've been reading for fun, you know, in high school or later. The second angle is that, you know, I've always been interested in technology. So as I mentioned, you know, I've been on the internet since about 1995, which is already a long time ago. And back then it was a simple place. You know, there were like five HTML tags and, you know, there weren't so many websites and you kind of learned new things as they came about. And so I've always been interested in learning about whatever it is that is coming next. And third, I spent the bulk of my career at the intersection of real estate and tech, which is kind of like real estate finance and tech. And on the real estate side, really more on the financial side, dealing with institutional investors, investing in China for 10 years, and really understanding how those big investors think. So the pension funds, the private equity funds, the real estate investment trusts, the sovereign wealth funds, and how they look at the world, and understanding that what they see is not, you know, a building or an office or a home, but that they see a financial asset with a certain risk profile, with a certain return profile. So I've always tried to look at the world through their eyes and understand how are things changing and how it's going to affect them, which was my main focus over the last 5-6 years with my book, Rethinking Real Estate, which really looks at how technology is kind of redefining everything we know about offices and homes and cities and a lot of the stuff that we saw during COVID, and what other investment products are emerging to make that world more interesting and to mix it up. So yeah, it all leads me to be very interested in crypto, not just as, you know, okay, let's speculate or let's buy and, you know, a token goes up, but more in terms of like, okay, how does this change everything we know about all of those other financial assets? How does this play into the strategies of those large investors all over the world? And how does that connect to that long historical story of money and government and power and war and passion and drama and everything else? So more than anything, I think I'm just infinitely curious and I'm looking for things that I can dive into that are bottomless. That's why I spent 10 years in China. It's a place that you can spend 10 years in and still feel like you have no idea what's going on. And I think crypto gives me that feeling as well, that I can learn and learn and learn and meet amazing people, but that it's just going to keep coming. So I love it.
Yeah. And these days you have a course called Hype Freaker Crypto, which is an incredible name. And what do you think is there, and I've been trying to, not too much, but, you know, whether that's through Twitter or through some other sources, been kind of high level observing, but it can be a challenge to, because of maybe some of the jargon or, you know, some of the different apps or different ways to kind of get involved. What do you think is a way for people to kind of have a minimum viable breakthrough or minimum viable understanding as to why either crypto or Web3 could be useful to knowledge workers, podcasters like myself?
So the short answer is I think that it's really hard to find information, especially to kind of get you started, get you up to a level that you can understand all sorts of other things that you read, which is why I created the course. Because, you know, on the one hand, you have just a lot of bullshitters and scammers and people that are promoting whatever it is that they're promoting. On the other hand, you have a lot of incumbent institutional people are just trying to poo-poo whatever is new and kind of dismiss it. And in between, you have a lot of well-meaning people, but that there are just like hardcore geeks that talk to themselves and write stuff that a civilian looking from the outside would read and say, listen, I have no idea what you're talking about. Like, it sounds interesting, but you lost me in the second sentence. The main solution is just to really just read a lot of different things and try to find a few authors that actually speak in a language that you understand. If I had to explain it kind of really quickly, I think what's interesting here is that it dramatically reduces the transaction costs of kind of sharing value and bringing people together spontaneously to kind of spend money together or make commitments together in different settings, which means, you know, okay, let's say I designed something or wrote a song or have a newsletter and I want my fans to support me and to buy a share of my future income, I can do that really easily. If I want to like compensate a lot of other people or several other people that contributed to an article that I created or to a song that I created, and I want to set up a mechanism that pays them automatically every time it's downloaded, I can do that now really, really easily. If I want to come together with a bunch of friends and buy the US Constitution or do something much simpler and much more reasonable, but just kind of want to create a shared treasury where we can all pull our money and know that none of us can steal it or run away with it and that it can only be used to a predefined purpose, then we can do that as well. And still with that explanation, probably a lot of it kind of sounds silly or frivolous. It's kind of like, okay, sounds good, but like I'm never going to be in that situation. But actually, once you start thinking beyond these things, usually in the world, once you reduce the transaction costs of kind of organizing and moving assets and money, all sorts of new business models emerge. And that's what I'm interested in. So, you know, for example, when it became cheaper to send files over the internet and to make payments of, you know, $1 over the internet, suddenly we had, you know, the iTunes store, and then we had Spotify, and we didn't have albums sold like in a box anymore and only once a year, and artists could release a song each time. So transaction costs change, new business models emerge, and that affects whoever it is that's creating something. To give one kind of more extreme example, something that I wrote about earlier today, is the idea of pyramid schemes. And so they sound like a bad thing, but actually imagine that as an artist, you had the ability to incentivize the first maybe 1,000 people that are going to share whatever it is that you posted, and to give them a percentage of any future earnings, like to help you kind of get over that initial hump to get into the YouTube algorithm or the Spotify algorithm, to have like 1,000 people like a song or share it within 5 minutes, and then help you kind of reach that escape velocity with the algorithm, but then actually compensate them and incentivize them to do that, and even give them the tools to incentivize other people that they share it with. So again, on the one hand, sounds like a scam. On the other hand, this is how cultural products spread. And you now have a way to create business models to actually incentivize and compensate whoever supports you and whoever believes in you, and to bring them along on that journey. So that's just one cool example.
And has it been the last 3 to 6 months, and we're talking now in December 2021, but has there been a shift, material shift in the last, call it 6 months or so, that has really enabled some of these, the reduction of transaction costs and the ability to reallocate or distribute value, that has really made it easier for more people to get involved and better systems?
I think we're in the middle of a shift. So, you know, the idea of something like NFTs, for example, that's been around since the original Ethereum white paper, like 2013, I think. But only in the last year and really in the last few months, it became a mainstream thing. You know, everyone's talking about NFTs, and mostly the focus is, again, on those frivolous kind of silly use cases of, yeah, some people bought a JPEG of a monkey and what's the big deal? But actually the big deal here is that you can take these nuggets of intellectual property and slice and dice them commercially, like sell them to people, incentivize people to resell them, make sure that whoever was the original artist actually gets a share of every future sale, combine them and combine pieces of things like pieces of virtual clothing and weapons from a computer game and different things, and put them together in new bundles and sell them and resell them. So only recently, I think people started to get excited about them, and that attracted a lot of investors into the space and a lot of talent, a lot of really smart people that are just looking at these technologies now and are trying to think, okay, what else can we build with this? What else can we incentivize people to do? How else can we empower creators to, you know, share more things with their communities? How can we empower communities to give them the tools to kind of organize together, decide how to spend their money, decide who they would like to support, and give them more tools to do that? So yeah, I think the last few months were definitely, there's a feeling of a shift, but it's been brewing underground for quite a while now.
Okay. And we talked about your course, Hype Free Crypto, but has there been any other projects or experiments that you've kind of instigated or started because of how this new momentum or how these new emerging technologies are kind of going to be shifting and creating new business models? Has there been other experiments, call it NFTs or anything else like that, that you're like, maybe I should try this for X type of reasons?
Not really. So, I mean, my focus, you know, I'm a writer and a teacher. I try to really be a pro at that and focus on that. You know, I invest, I participate in other people's projects, but, you know, I don't want that to define my work. And I don't want that to kind of also bias my, you know, I don't want to get too excited about anything. I like to look at it from the outside. I'm generally pro change, pro innovation. So, you know, I'm not like an outsider, kind of cynic and against everything. But I, you know, my job is to teach and to help more and more people understand things clearly and then go and build amazing things themselves. And, you know, that's my contribution to society. If I see other people building amazing things and I can support them and connect them, that's all I'm looking to do. So
cool. And you've had a kind of a history of kind of being the liaison between kind of two different worldviews, so to speak, of East Coast, West Coast. You mentioned real estate, technology, and investors and stuff like that. So,
yeah. So, you know, first I spent a decade in China, and in China I was doing private equity real estate. So really flying all over the country, looking at pieces of land, meeting with local politicians and landowners and governors, and trying to explain to them why their district or their town needs this thing called a shopping mall, and why we need Zara and Uniqlo and H&M here and not whatever it is that they plan to do there, and why we need different parking restrictions, and why we need different ceiling heights, to explain all sorts of concepts from another world, and to try to convince them through their own incentive structure, through what's important to them, on why they should do this and why it would be good for the city, good for the people there, why it would create jobs. So I always feel very comfortable kind of, yeah, mediating two extremely different worlds in that case. So, you know, I had like European investors and Chinese government people, and me, crazy Israeli guy in between, trying to explain to each party how they can benefit each other, and succeeding sometimes. And then, yeah, within the real estate world, trying to explain to people in that industry, which is, you know, the largest asset class in the world, very wealthy people, all of them think that they know everything. So, you know, big personalities, and to come to them and say, hey, you know, everything you've been doing so far is wonderful, but the world is going to change dramatically. And all of these assumptions that have been true since the beginning of time, you know, that buy land, God is not making any more of it, and location, 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 all of that is not going to be enough anymore. You have to start thinking about brand, about technology, about building your own online distribution channels, about working with data, about doing all of these crazy things, and even silly things like, you know, like the WeWork stories and kind of the Adam Newmans of the world, where someone comes and pretends he's a rock star and all of these people laugh at him. But to go and tell them, listen, what he's doing is actually important. You know, you're going to need your own brand as well. You're going to need to stand for something as well. You're going to need to have a personality and a consumer brand, not just to look like solid for a bank when you go and ask for a mortgage, but that to have some sort of household brand, because that's what people expect now when they make decisions on any dollar that they spend. They want to feel that they put their money into something that, that is aligned with their values, that resonates with them. And trying to sell that to the real estate industry was really hard. And I did a reasonable job at that. I think I really helped change some things. But, you know, my interests are broader than that. And I found through my readership that a lot of it comes from traditional finance, real estate also, but not just real estate, that they were very interested in crypto and in other things that are happening. And that they felt exactly what you asked about, that, okay, there's no good sources out there. And even though they don't consider me the biggest expert in this space, and I don't presume to be, they want me to explain it to them. They're like, we trust you. We know you've done the homework. Can you make this accessible for us? And on the other side, a lot of tech people and crypto people that are also my readers that are telling me, listen, we're doing all these cool things, but we want to think of how they apply to the rest of the world. How can we go into traditional big industries and actually convince them to do what we want them to do? Because when we go and talk to them, they have no idea what we want and they just kick us out. Can you bring all of us together and create an environment where we can actually talk to each other and learn something useful from each other? So that's what I aspire to do in everything, and most recently in the crypto space.
Yeah. And it sounds like you were talking a little bit about kind of like the rise of the individual, or the importance of kind of everybody is a little bit of, you know, the professional brand or personal brand that people want to buy from people. How are you thinking about what it means to kind of be like a knowledge worker these days, and what people should be thinking about more of, or whether, what should they be creating content? Should they be, you know, investing into crypto? Should they be diversifying? Should they be, how do you think about, as these emerging technologies, and as you've been thinking about, you know, the future of cities and future of work and stuff, what should people be doing?
So, you know, I grew up in a world where many things were still governed by the normal distribution. So, you know, my parents told me you should be a lawyer or an accountant or an engineer, go work for a big company, or even stay in the army or work for the government. You'll be safe. Everything is going to be okay. The alternative to that were these superstar professions, you know, go be an athlete or be a singer or be an artist, which was a very different lifestyle choice. You know, you choose to either become yourself, like a known thing, a person who has his own brand, and then you either shoot for the stars or you completely fail. You know, 98% of actors don't make money from acting, likewise for singers and aspiring NBA players, etc. what's happening today in the world is that these kind of power law dynamics are starting to govern more and more professions. So the best programmers, the best designers, the best teachers are making more money than ever before. And there's a long tail of other people who are either the middle is kind of disappearing. And then there's a long tail of people who are very specialized and maybe cater to a small community where they can make a nice living. But there's not much in the middle. You can't just say, hey, I'll just be average and kind of get the general skills and then I'll just cruise through life and be safe, which was hard enough even 20 or 30 years ago, but at least it was a possible option. Today, we're in a world where I call it the Tina economy. You know, the media looks at people that are kind of gambling and taking risks and they're saying, okay, these people are crazy and YOLO and whatever, but actually it's not YOLO, it's Tina. You know, people have no alternative. They cannot choose safety because a lot of those safe options are no longer there. You know, the 40-year career in the same company doesn't exist anymore. The idea of just going to school and then just getting a salary for until you retire doesn't exist anymore. The idea of just putting your money in the bank and watching it kind of increase over time doesn't exist anymore. So you have to take risks. So financially, yeah, it means more exotic investments. I'm not going to promote anything here. But professionally, it means that you constantly have to reinvent yourself and that you want to be as independent as possible, which means to have your own distribution channel directly to the people who care about you. Now, that doesn't mean that you need to become the next Taylor Swift or Donald Trump or Elon Musk, or, you know, you can have 500 people who care about you or 100 or 5,000 or 10,000. People today online make a living from specializing in the most amazing things. You know, I've seen people teach courses about, you know, writing a master's thesis for women who have two kids. You know, that's enough of a narrow niche to make a living off of. And people do a million other things. And likewise for designers, for storytellers, it's not about being the best in the world or the only one in the world. It's about having your own specific voice and communicating in a way that draws the relevant people to you, that draws the people who are interested in you to you. And by communicating, I mean producing content in some way. I think every newsletter, every tweet is essentially a lottery ticket. It's something that you throw out into the world that might be picked up by someone who reads it and says, okay, this person gets it. I want to work with them on whatever it is. And just like I mentioned about my crypto course, my followers want to learn from me because they want to learn from me, not because they think I'm the biggest expert in the world, but because they think, okay, I like the way he thinks. I like the way he will explain it to me. I like his voice, his tone, his approach. That's what I'm looking for. And, you know, there could be 1,000 other people who are going to teach the same thing. And there's room in the world for them as well. You know, I'm just a little guy somewhere in some corner of the internet. And people can keep walking in this market and they'll find someone else who kind of looks more attractive to them or relevant to them. There's room for that as well. But you have to be out there. And again, it doesn't mean that you have to be extroverted or there's a million ways to do it. You know, I'm not posting selfies of myself all day. I'm a writer. That's what I'm comfortable doing. I go on podcasts every now and then. There's a million ways to communicate who you are in whatever medium you feel comfortable in. But the more you do it and the more you put yourself out there, the more you give yourself a chance to connect with those people. And the more you have that sort of safety net where if whatever it is that you're doing now doesn't work, you know who to reach out to. You know that you have your own channel. You're not dependent on someone who's going to tell you, hey, you know, we don't need you anymore. Go home tomorrow and don't come back. But that, you know, you start living life on your own terms to the extent possible, that, you know, that you decide what you pick up, that you have the ability to reach out to the world and to, you know, ask for something or sell something and that the world responds. And I still think, you know, we're talking about crypto. I'm still stuck with just the idea of the internet. I think most people just don't get that yet. Like how much power you have in your hand now to just reach out to anyone anywhere on earth and just, you know, build something together, sell them something, buy something, learn something. Like it just blows my mind every day, this internet thing. I'm still not over it.
I mean, it brought us together. It's bringing us together right now, right? And, you know, we never talked before this. I think that's really powerful, really amazing.
Yeah. And it happens all the time. Like it just happens all the time. You know, if you're on Twitter, it's just like every week, some amazing thing will happen to you. And again, I don't have a million followers. I have like 10,000 or a little more now. It's like, no one's ever heard of me. And still, I can derive amazing things out of this platform. And so many people can do the same.
And each tweet, each blog post is a lottery ticket. That's pretty powerful.
Yeah, it is. And they're free, you know?
All right. And so then, all right. So people need to be taking a little bit more risk because you can't rely on, you know, the one job, so to speak. Need to hopefully build a portfolio, however you kind of define that. And crypto is a way for to take more bigger risks, which obviously means has bigger downside too.
Yeah. And again, I don't see it necessarily as taking more risk. And it's more of just acknowledging how much risk you've already taken, you know, just having one job, locking yourself to one place, not having your own distribution channel or connection with people who might become your customers. This is the risk. Or not being part of a community of other people that, you know, can help you build stuff later or refer people to you or even help encourage you or you know, connect you to other amazing people when necessary. This is your risk. You know, just going to the office every day and thinking that you're safe, this is dangerous. So realizing that is important. And again, on the investment side, I'm kind of more cautious there. I think that, you know, I'm not saying, you know, just buy crypto and everything will be okay. Personally, you know, I have about 12-15% of my investable portfolio in these kind of things. Again, for some people it might mean $1,000, for some people it might mean $1 million, but I definitely wouldn't put even close to most of my eggs in like very volatile things. But just the beginning of thinking like an independent person, I think that's important. Just even thinking about your own investment and understanding that you have to be proactive about it and learn about it and that it's your responsibility. That alone, I think, is an important step that many people just don't think about. You know, they have their 401k or someone else is managing it, and or maybe they don't even have that. And they're like, you know, I just have a job and life is stable. And if I lose it, I'll just get another job and, you know, I'll just go through life. I think that's a very dangerous approach.
Yeah. All right. So on the side of crypto and Web3, we talked about a couple different ways to think about getting up to speed or to learning, dabbling a little bit. Is there anything else that you think that we missed on that front of, you know, read this one blog post, watch this one YouTube video, join this Discord. I recently joined a Discord this week, and just the act of kind of being in there, like it shifted from this like, hey, I'm in learning or observing on Twitter to then like, I'm in learning and observing in this Discord only that's solely focused on that. There was a little shift just from that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a few accounts that are good to follow. There's like Chris Dixon and Packy McCormick and Naval, and there's a few good podcasts. Again, with all of these people, usually, you know, whether it is with Tim Ferriss or with Patrick O'Shaughnessy when they cover this space. And there's the A16Z crypto canon, which includes introductions. And even a lot of the kind of mainstream websites about crypto have introductions, you know, like Binance or CoinDesk, Coinbase. They have some basic introductions to different things, or even the Ethereum.org website has introductions. But it will take some time because most of these, you will read them, you'll probably get lost a little bit. Like you'll kind of feel like, okay, I understood something, but he mentioned another thing that I don't understand. So it does take some work. Another thing that I find super valuable is just to really get your hands dirty. You know, go install a wallet, buy some tokens. You can even use some test tokens. There's test networks on Ethereum that you can go to, like, for example, faucet.paradigm.xyz, and you get some test tokens, basically toy Ethereum, and then you have it in your wallet, and then you can take that and kind of go to uniswap.org, for example, and do a simple swap to see how currency exchange works in crypto. Or go to OpenSea.io, which is where people buy and sell NFTs. So they have a test kind of website as well. You can go there, see what it feels like to buy an NFT or to sell one, even with toy money, and see what life looks like when you have a wallet and you connect to different websites and you see how your assets and different things that you bought actually go with you from one website to another without you having to create an account. And then you start to kind of understand, okay, there's a different system here. What else can I do with it? And then you start playing with real money maybe. And gradually, you know, you learn the terms. And as you said, maybe you join a community, a Discord, you talk to people. And one, it's simple advice, but, you know, when you are inside those communities, just ask questions. Most people in crypto are very passionate about it. They love to talk about it. They'll tell you everything. And don't be shy. You know, if they say something that mentions some term that you don't understand, then ask and they'll be happy to explain it to you. Just like visiting a new country, you know, just like landing in China. Ask people. People are friendly. They want to tell you about their culture and their economy. And And the sooner the better. And don't feel like an idiot if you don't understand a lot of things, because most people don't, and they change so quickly. And it's really so early, and we're in the prehistory of even the internet itself, I think. We're just starting to understand what this thing is actually going to do to us. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Crazy, crazy stuff. I love that about the test accounts. I didn't know that as much. That's really cool. It's just a way to experience things and, mm-hmm. and to get your hands dirty a little bit without the money side of things.
Because the wallets, you know, in the world of crypto, Web3 is not just where you put your money. It's really kind of like your ID. You know, you take it and you log into different websites. And then if you own an NFT or a video or the rights to something, you can take that with you across different platforms, and they will know what you own and what privileges you have. And so it's not just about, you know, investing or speculation. It's really just about, it's a different way of interacting with platforms. You know, if I go to Facebook, I have to create an account, put in my name, add my credit card details, let them access all my contacts and put them on their servers, give them all sorts of things that then they save and they own my account. With a wallet, you connect to an app, you bring everything else with you that they need to know about you in order to do whatever it is that you want to do there. But once you disconnect, they don't have that information anymore and you take it with you. And when you connect to another app, you just click on a button and you're connected and they have the relevant information to allow you to do whatever you want to do. And again, they don't save it, hopefully, or at least they don't have to save it in order to work, unlike Facebook or Amazon or kind of Web2 things. And if you bought something there, like a song, for example, or subscription to something, that thing sits on the blockchain itself. So it doesn't belong to that website. It's not a privilege that exists only in your account in that website. It actually comes with you wherever you go. I know it sounds a little abstract, but one way of understanding it is imagine a computer game. So inside a computer game, you can buy stuff, but then they only stay within the computer game. You can make friends, but they're only your friends inside the computer game. And there are rules, you know, someone can define rules that, you know, if you own a certain sword, then nobody else can own it because that's what the game creators decided. So what crypto wallets and blockchains allow you to do is enforce these things across the whole web, or at least on all the websites or apps that run on the same blockchain. So you can have an identity, you can have assets that are both portable, so you can take them with you across different apps, and you can have rules governed by smart contracts that are actually enforced across the whole blockchain. So they're not just, hey, because somebody bought this sword within Fortnite, then nobody else can now buy it within Fortnite. But it's, if you're the owner of this digital thing on this blockchain, then nobody can buy this digital, you know, it cannot belong to anyone else, and you have the rights to transfer it. And if you transfer those rights, whoever bought them from you can then take them into this game or to another game or to another platform and sell them and do whatever they want with them. So it's a bit like turning the whole web into this big computer game that has its own laws that can now finally be enforced. So, you know, a lot of the conversation, sorry, I'm kind of diving into a rabbit hole here with you, but a lot of the conversation now in the world of NFTs is like, okay, but how does this kind of work with traditional copyright laws? So, you know, can you enforce traditional laws on NFTs? Like if I bought an NFT of a song, does it mean that I also have rights over it in the physical world or, you know, in the old world? And it's an important question, but in more and more cases, it actually doesn't matter at all, because if you live in the internet and the internet itself or the web has a way of enforcing your rights there automatically, then you don't need to sue anyone because they just cannot use that file that you own. You know, they cannot go and put the profile picture on Twitter maybe soon because Twitter is going to validate it with, you know, on the Ethereum network with NFTs. So it's not about, oh, can I sue this person for taking my JPEG off? It's about, you know, the web itself will now be able to enforce these rules in order to verify who owns what and to give you the powers that you paid for. So I think that's what's interesting here. And I know it sounds abstract. It's hard to get your head around, but it kind of gives you a sense of where we're going and why it's interesting.
Yeah, love it. All right, Dror, well, this is an incredible conversation to scratch the surface, but a lot of incredible actionable ideas. So really appreciate it. The Hype-Free Crypto course, you're running a cohort right now. The next one is coming up January, I think is when it starts. Mm-hmm. You have a newsletter that comes out every Friday. Is there anything else or what would be the best way that people can stay in touch and learn?
Yeah, so Twitter at DrawerPoleg or HypeFreeCrypto.com, I think the best place. You know, drop in your email, you'll get an email from me, and then you can follow up about whatever you like, and we'll take it from there.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Dror. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, David. My pleasure.
Hey, friend. Thank you for tuning in to this special episode of Portfolio Career Podcast. Would love to hear what you learned and what you enjoyed. You can find me on Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, whatever is best for you. And as a reminder, I'm just one email away as well. This episode with timestamp notes is available on my website at portfoliocareerpodcast.com. There you can subscribe to my newsletter called One Email Away, which includes the best insights from the podcast and friend-sourced opportunities. So excited for you to build and grow your portfolio career. Thank you so much.